Did you know the Colts have only punted 5 times? That's tied for second fewest through 4 games in a season in the Super Bowl era. They only one punt in weeks 1 through 3, which set a Super Bowl era record. There are 4 punts in week 4, 3 that came in the second half. They kind of ruined the stat I wanted to give today, but whatever. They're still tied for second. This is the Numbers Game. I'm Cynthia Freeland, and we get to start the Sunday slate with another international tilt, this time in London with the Vikings and Browns, where rookie Dylan Gabriel will look to match Jackson Dart's 1-0 start with a win of his own. The Eagles will look to stay perfect at home with the Broncos and their defense coming to town. Daniel Jones and the Colts, well, they're looking to bounce back after a tough one in LA. And of course, the undefeated Bills will face their AFC East rival Pats to end the day. Time to get through every week for a Sunday game. Let's get to it. There are only 14 total games this week. The bye weeks have started. We already did TNF. Monday Night Football will have its own show. That leaves us with 12 in this episode. Atlanta, Chicago, Green Bay, and Pittsburgh, they are all on byes, so adjust your fantasy lineups accordingly. TNF and the Sunday Nighter are the only two divisional matchups this week. We have 8 interconference tilts. So we'll start with that in Tottenham Hotspur, which is one of those tilts. But before we do that, let's do some accounting of last week's results. My results for week 4 were 7-9 straight up, 9-7 against the spread, and 11-5 on totals, which brings the season to 59.4% straight up, 50.8 ATS, and 56.3 on totals. Minnesota becomes just the 3rd team in NFL history to play multiple international games in the same season, but they are the 1st team to do so in multiple countries. They went from Dublin, Ireland last week to London, England this week. They will take on Cleveland in a game where Dylan Gabriel will be making his first start as the Browns quarterback. The Vikings are favored by 3.5 points, and the total is 36 points. And I will spare you my English accent. No, I won't. Tottenham Hotspur is also probably my favorite stadium name, maybe ever. Starting with the Vikings run game, well, Jordan Mason leads the team with 271 rushing yards and 2 rushing touchdowns. 62% of the team's rushing yards, that's 11th most in the league, they belong to him. 57 was his output last week against Pittsburgh. That was the fewest of any of his 8 career starts. His average is 89.6. Some of this was because of good defense, but much of it was because of game script. Now, the Browns run defense, they're nothing to mess with. They are still best in the league in terms of rushing yards per game allowed and yards per carry. So 70.1 and 2.7. 2.7 per carry. That's very low. They're also the only team with negative rushing yards before contact this season. It's negative 14. They've hit the ball carrier before the line of scrimmage on 62.5% of opposing rushing attempts. That is the highest rate through 4 weeks by any team since 2017. That's kind of when we first started tracking. So it could be even longer. There have only been 3 defenses total in the Next Gen Stats era, that's that 2017 marker that I talked about, to allow negative yards before contact through 4 weeks. And the only team with more negative yards than the 25 Browns were the 23 Browns. Rookie Carson Schweisinger leads the team with 14 run stops. He's tied for 5th most in the NFL. And Myles Garrett, of course, he's great in the run game too. 7 run stops, which are the most among edge rushers league-wide. When the Vikings look to pass the ball, the first priority will be to shore up the pressure situation. Minnesota's offense has allowed 18 sacks. That's the most in the NFL, and it's the 2nd most in their franchise since 1970 through 4 games. Carson Wentz is taking 3.1 sacks per game as a starter. That actually goes back to 2020, so a lot of different teams there. That's the 4th most in the NFL over that time period. He got sacked 6 times last week. That was a lot. Myles Garrett, pretty good at that as well. He also has 11 quick pressures this season, which is tied for 2nd most. All right, let's focus on Myles Garrett's pass rush here for a second. He's generated a 19.8 pressure rate this season. That's 6th highest. His 2.67 second average time to pressure, 7th fastest. And by the way, he's racked up 270 quick pressures since 2019. That is 80 more than any other player. The matchup here, well, it's Garrett, who's aligned on the defensive right 84% of the time against left tackle Christian Darrisaw. Darrisaw has allowed just an 8.2 pressure rate. That ranks 12th lowest, and he's allowed 1 sack. Darrisaw is very good. So last season, the Vikings left tackle kept the pocket clean for an average of 3.41 seconds. That was the 3rd longest time to pressure among left tackles. All right, Myles Garrett detour over. Back to the Vikings passing offense. Last week, Wentz was effective when targeting outside the hashes against the Steelers. He went 25 of 30 for 296 and 2 touchdowns. He struggled when targeting inside the hashes. That's where he went 5 of 7 for 54 yards with two picks. Now, just because we talked about the spacing last week, let's pay it off here. Both Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison had more than 110 receiving yards each. And that was, of course, Addison's return from suspension. And we talked about how that would benefit both receivers. Now, the Browns defense is tough. Best total defense. We know it. But KOC will look to leverage mismatches in man coverage. No team has given up more touchdowns when deploying man than the Browns, who've allowed 7 such touchdowns. When the Browns run the football, they will likely try to emulate some of the success Kenneth Gainwell had against the Vikings and their zone defense last week. Quinshon Judkins has 90-plus scrimmage yards and a touchdown in both of his last 2 games. It is always a good idea to rely on heavier formations and higher probability plays when facing Brian Flores' crew. The Vikings have had 2 or more sacks in 8 straight games, which is the longest active streak in the NFL. And that is even before factoring in starting a rookie. Before we go into Dylan Gabriel, let's just look at the O-line for a second, because one matchup stands out here. That is between Joel Bitonio and Jonathan Allen. Bitonio, the guard, has allowed just a 4% pressure rate, which ranks 5th lowest, and he has yet to allow a sack. Jonathan Allen has a 9% pressure rate. That's in the top third of all defensive tackles. And he has 183 pressures since 2021. Of course, that's with 2 different teams, but it is still the 10th most by any interior pass rusher. He has added 12 tackles for negative EPA in the run game, along with 5 stuffs. That is tied for 2nd most this season. Which brings us to Dylan Gabriel, the 3rd round pick in this season's draft, who's gone 3 of 4 for 19 yards and 1 touchdown in 2 appearances so far this season. He is set to become the first quarterback to make his first start internationally. Gabriel's Oregon PFF data from last season shows that his blitz results were a 72.5 completion percentage, 9.1 yards per attempt, which is more than his 8.5 average under all circumstances, and 15 of his 30 touchdowns, along with just 1 of his 6 total interceptions, came when teams rushed an extra passer. Now, under pressure, remember that is not always the same thing as being blitzed. He had just a 53.8 completion percentage, 8.6 yards per attempt with 8 touchdowns and 1 interception. The Vikings defense, we know they're going to blitz. 39.8 blitz percentage this season, that's 3rd highest. And in terms of pressure, it's 38.9. That's their rate, which ranks 10th. And of course, we already talked about that 2 sack record in 8 games. Bottom line, I have Minnesota winning 22-16. Which means the Browns forecast to keep their not-so-favorable trend of scoring fewer than 18 points per game. They are currently the only team that has scored fewer than 18 in each outing this season. This isn't to say that Dylan Gabriel will perform poorly. It is just a tough first draw in terms of matchup. I will note, I did actually say the same thing about Jackson Dart last week, so there is always hope. How about some single window snacks? 3 stats for this early game that you can track. I always feel like anything to do with England has to be regal and include some history, so let's go with that. Oh, and these things are a little bit more tell your friends than action items per se. Number 1, Justin Jefferson needs just 109 receiving yards to pass Jerry Rice for 3rd most through a player's first 6 career seasons in NFL history. He is coming off a game with 126. My model's median projection for him is less than 109, but he hits or exceeds it in about 25% of simulations, so there is that. Number 2, Myles Garrett has 106.5 career sacks. 4 of them have happened this season. He needs just 2 to pass the Hall of Famer Reggie White, who has 108, for the most by a player prior to their 30th birthday. He has a little time. Garrett's birthday is December 29th, just so we're good. It could easily happen this week. My model kind of doesn't think so. It happens in only 12% of simulations, but it could happen. He has faced a top sack-allowing team 2 times before, and he's had 1 sack in each contest, just so you have all the data. Number 3, going back to Jettas here, Justin Jefferson has 365 receiving yards in 3 international games. That's 2nd most in NFL history. Only Buffalo's Stevie Johnson has more. He has 386. All of those were earned in Toronto, in case anyone was tracking. Does Justin Jefferson make it past 21 more yards? I'll let you decide, but when it happens, you know what to tell your friends. In addition to the London game in Tottenham Hotspur, my model picks 3 more day Sunday games where the favorite is set to do some favoriting. The Panthers host the Dolphins in a game where the Dolphins are favored by 1.5 points and the total is 36. Tua Tagovailoa has a 94.1 passer rating against pressure since the beginning of 24 after averaging just 69 in this metric in his previous 4 seasons. Good news for Tua in this one. He likely won't face a ton of pressure. The Panthers defense ranks 31st in pressure rate at 24%, and they've allowed a 39% dropback success rate when they have gotten pressure this season. That is 6th highest. One area where the Panthers defense could have some success, slowing Devon Achane down in the run game. Carolina has only missed 13 tackles on rushes by backs this season. That's sixth fewest, good for a 16% missed tackle rate, the third lowest in the league. Achan is good at forcing missed tackles, though. He has forced a missed tackle on 26% of his rushing attempts, the ninth highest rate, and 39% of his rushing yards have come after forcing defenders to miss. This is the fifth highest rate. Bottom line, I have Miami by 2 points, 24-22, which continues their trend of scoring at least 21 points, which has happened over the past three games. This forecasts it to turn to four games. Tyreek Hill is a big loss, but getting Darren Waller back was at least a little bit of a help. The Titans head to Arizona to take on the Cardinals, who are now down yet another running back with Trey Benson joining James Conner on the IR. The home team is favored by 7.5, and the total is 42.5. The Titans have rushed to the inside on 50% of their attempts, which sounds super balanced, but it's actually the 11th highest rate. It hasn't really gone well for them, though, as they have the 7th fewest EPA per inside rush. It's negative 0.22, and this is an especially bad matchup for inside rushes, as the Cardinals' defense is allowing the 4th fewest rushing yards over expected to them at negative 0.6. Kyler Murray has a career-low 42.4% success rate on dropbacks and a career-low 40% success rate on run plays this season. In fact, he is the only player to have not forced a single missed tackle with at least 25 rushing attempts. Kyler is getting the ball out fast this season with an average time to throw of 2.63 seconds. That is his career fastest. Now, those passes are only averaging 4.9 yards per attempt. That is also a career-low, but the Titans defense has allowed 6.9 yards per attempt on sub 2.5 seconds throw, which is the 7th most. Bottom line, I have Arizona winning 27-18, which means a game where they don't have to worry about a time expiring field goal dinging them. Now, the Cardinals defense is tied for 17th in pressure rate at 34%, but poor Cam Ward has been under pressure on 44% of his dropbacks. That's the third highest rate. And when under pressure, 26% of them turn into sacks. That's the fifth highest pressure to sack ratio. His negative 33 EPA lost on sacks, that's the lowest. His dropback success rate when pressured, seventh lowest, just 26%. Now, Ward has some underlying metrics that suggest his production will take a positive turn, just maybe not until some of these receivers get a little bit more open. That's one of the metrics that I'm talking about. Las Vegas and Indianapolis square off at Lucas Oil Stadium. The line is set at the Colts by 6.5 with a total of 48 points. The note on Vegas has to be about Ashton Jeanty. He averaged 6.7 yards per touch in week 4. Just 2.8 was his average in weeks 1 through 3. He had 138 rushing yards against the Bears, despite being hit at or behind the line of scrimmage on 15 of his 21 carries. That is a 71.4% rate. That is the 8th highest rate of any player in a game this season. For the year so far, 252 of his 282 rushing yards have come after contact. That is an 89.4% rate. And he earned 26 missed tackles. That's second most behind only Jonathan Taylor. Pretty interesting, huh? 35% of Jeanty's carries are resulting in no gain or a loss of yards. That's the highest for any running back with 30 carries. I'm just trying to tell you that the situation is bad, but Jeanty is good. The Colts are a tough matchup here, too, as DeForest Buckner and Grover Stewart are tied for the most run stops for unsuccessful offensive plays with 12 among defensive linemen this season. It's 12 apiece, by the way. And Buckner's run tackle percentage is 32%, which leads all defensive tackles. How are we feeling about this Indiana Jones nickname? I don't know. I really love Indiana Jones, so it's very hard for me to get on board until someone's like, super duper. Anyways, let me know what you think. But Daniel Jones, he does have a 61.5 dropback success rate against the blitz that paces the league. He also leads the league with 470 passing yards when teams have brought an extra rusher. The Raiders, they blitz at the 10th highest rate, 33% of the time, but it doesn't always work. They have the 8th lowest pressure rate when they've blitzed this season, just 32%. Bottom line in this one, I have Indianapolis by 8, 29-21. With Colton Miller out, the O-line woes for the Raiders do not get better for Jeanty or for Geno Smith, who leads the NFL with 7 interceptions. The Raiders have allowed 23 points off of giveaways. That's tied for 5th most. And the Colts, well, they've scored 30 points after forcing turnovers. That's the 4th most. Now that we've covered those three, let's make a quick checklist for one thing to be on the lookout for from each team in those three games. I'm calling this one prop ability because I love a cheesy moment, and I'll also give the risk on a scale of 1 to 5, 1 being the lowest, 5 being the riskiest, which is like a probability for a player prop, hence a prop ability. You get it. In Miami at Carolina, On the Panther side, rookie wideout Teterro McMillan to have more than 55 and a half receiving yards. I have him with 62. McMillan has fared well against press man, which the Dolphins play at the 11th highest rate, 19% of the time. The league average is 16%. The probability on this one is a 2 out of 5. The Dolphins running back Devon Achane to find the end zone once has a probability of 1, but I like being right. In Tennessee at Arizona, rookie quarterback Cam Ward to pass for more than 186 yards against Arizona. I have him forecast for 196 with 1 touchdown, 1 interception, and 19 rushing yards. This is a 3 out of 5 in probability. You want a 5 out of 5 in probability? Fine. The Cardinals receiver Marvin Harrison Jr. to find himself in the end zone for a score again this week. In Las Vegas at Indianapolis, in a breakout 3-touchdown outing last week, Raider rookie Ashton Jeanty, he really looked like he was ready for this to be a weekly thing. Maybe not 3 touchdowns a week, but 1 touchdown is a probability of 2 out of 5 this week. Ooh, I found a 4 out of 5 in probability to round this out. Colts quarterback Daniel Jones to complete more than 20 passes. The next 4 games share the theme of having a quarterback question, either due to injury or potentially having a rookie making his second start. That's how I got the Giants into the section. You'll see. Here we go. As the G-men head to New Orleans, this is where Jackson Dart will make his second start of the season in one of the most fun but loud and craziest stadiums in the entire league. The Saints are favored by 2 and the total is 41. I'm all in on the Jackson Dart swagger. I love the confidence. I don't understand the social media posting. Seems pretty confident to me. I like his swagger. I like his cutoff sweatshirt. And of course, he is a winner, which means he gets the regular numbers game treatment now. Dart was 7 of 13 against the Chargers when they used single high coverage last week. He was 6 of 7 on all other passes. He averaged 4.7 yards per pass against single high. It was 9.4 yards per pass against split safeties. Now, I say this because the Saints use single high at the 5th highest rate, 61%. Dart was 0-4 on pass attempts when he was pressured, and he was 13 of 16 with no pressure. New Orleans defense is dead last in pressure rate at 22.1%, but they're tied for 7th in the NFL in sacks with 11. The Saints offense has earned the 9th most yards after contact per rush this season at 3.7 in this metric, but flipped over to the defensive side. The Giants have allowed the 2nd most such yards at 4.3. And Spencer Rattler, he has 5 touchdown passes with just 1 interception, which is the best touchdown to interception ratio by any quarterback who's taken at least 100 passing attempts, but has 0 wins over their team's first 4 games, and that is since 1970. So what happens here? Can Jackson Dart do it again, or does Spencer Rattler finally get his first win? My model says Spencer Rattler finally gets the first dub, but just by 1 point. Saints win this one 22-20. Jake Browning and the Bengals host Jared Goff and the Lions in a game where Detroit is favored on the road by 10.5 points, and the total is 49.5. Jahmyr Gibbs has 21 forced missed tackles on the season. That ranks 10th. David Montgomery has 105 yards after forcing a missed tackle. That is 10th. The Detroit running backs overall, you can see that the whole is greater than the sum of the parts because they have the 4th most forced missed tackles overall at 34 and the 3rd most yards after forcing missed tackles with 215. And the Bengals run defense has missed 46 tackles this season. That is 2nd most in the league and allowed 303 yards off of missing these tackles, which is tied for the most. The Bengals run game is kind of in the opposite situation as the Lions, as Chase Brown has negative 40 yards before contact. That's the fewest in the NFL. And he's been hit behind the line of scrimmage on 67% of carries. That is the highest by a running back in a season since 2018. Bottom line, I have Detroit winning by 10 points, 31-21. Detroit's defense, they have 14 sacks this season. That's tied for 2nd behind only the Broncos. And the Bengals have allowed 13 sacks, which is tied for the 4th most. Detroit has the 5th highest pressure rate, 42.1%, and they've blitzed on 41.4% of their opponent dropbacks. That is the 2nd highest rate. One matchup to watch on the other side, though, is Trey Hendrickson against Penei Sewell, a rematch from week 6 of 2021, where they lined up across from each other on 16 pass rush snaps. And Hendrickson got the best of Penei Sewell 4 times, 4 pressures, no sacks. That is one of just 4 games in which Sewell has allowed a 25% pressure rate versus a pass rusher ever in his career. As of this recording, we don't have a definitive answer about Jaden Daniels' status, though it seems a bit more promising than last week based on him actually being medically cleared and appearing at practice. Well, either way, the Commanders come out here to SoFi Stadium to take on the Chargers. LA is favored by a field goal and the total is 48. The Commanders have used empty formations on a league-high 16% of their total offensive snaps this season. That's the third highest rate. Jaden Daniels has completed 11 of 18 passes for 135 and two touchdowns out of empty. This includes five completions for 83 yards on 10 downfield passes, so 10-plus air yarders. Opposing passers have completed 9 of 14 for 90 yards and a touchdown out of empty against the Chargers defense, so maybe that's one strategy. The Chargers offense, and of course, Justin Herbert, has targeted a slot receiver 48 times this season. That is the fourth most. They have 320 passing yards when targeting a slot receiver, sixth most, and 52.1%, that's their passing success rate, when targeting the slot, 12th highest. Now, Washington, they have allowed the third highest passing success rate to slot targets this season, 64%, along with 10.1 yards per target to the slot, the most in the NFL, along with the fourth highest completion percentage over expected to slot targets. It's 0.67%. Other than the Chargers looking to target slot receivers, I just said slot a ton of times. That's math. One more big thing to watch is the Chargers O-line. Of course, they're missing their starting tackles now, both of them. And the league's third best pressure defensive front is Washington. It's over 45%. Now, we saw Austin Deckless go in against the New York Giants, and he once told me at the East Wind Shrine Bowl how much he liked to eat alligator. He's a very charming guy. He is a massive guy, but it's going to be hard for him to fill Joe Alt's shoes. Why? Alt has allowed just a 6.7 pressure percentage this season. That's fifth best among left tackles. That's after moving from the right to the left with Rashawn Slater being lost to injury before the season even started. Now, Herbert averages 7.7 passing yards per attempt with Alt on the field versus 5.2 with him off. And the 2.92 second time to throw with Alt on the field is now switched to a quicker formation, quicker situation, because his average is just 2.64 seconds. That's Justin Herbert's average time to throw with Joe Alt off the field. Bottom line in this one, I have the Chargers winning 24-22. One good piece of news for the Chargers is that Washington's defense has allowed the most passing yards, 640, on downfield throws. Those are 10-plus air yarders. And Justin Herbert, he has six passing touchdowns on such passes. That is second most in the league. The final quarterback question mark is between Houston and Baltimore. Houston, where each of their three losses came against teams who are 3-1 this season, and each game was decided by 7 points or fewer. And they're at Baltimore, where each of their three losses have come against teams that won 13 or more games last season. This one is shaped by injuries, which means the Texans are favored by 2.5 points, and the total is 40.5 points. C.J. Stroud has the opportunity to get back in form on intermediate passes in this game. Last season, he completed 61% of such passes, the seventh highest rate, had the eighth most yards off of them with 1,272, and a 0.61 EPA per attempt, which was fifth most. This year, it has not been a strength, at least not yet. He's just a 42.1 completion percentage, that's eighth lowest, 140 yards, seventh fewest, and a 0.12 EPA. 13th fewest. Now, the Ravens defense, they have been vulnerable against intermediate passes this season, allowing the fourth most yards, 365, a league high six touchdowns, and the seventh most EPA per attempt at 0.63 on such throws. Baltimore will look to exploit a matchup advantage on outside runs in this game. Why? Well, it's something that they've done very often. 64% of the time they are rushing to the outside. That's the second highest rate in the league, and they've been successful on it. 4.3 rushing yards over expected per outside rush this season, the most in the NFL by 0.8 yards. That's almost a full yard. Well, Houston has allowed a 10-plus yard rush on 26% of outside rushing attempts this season, the third highest rate in the NFL. So explosives to the outside. I'm thinking Derrick Henry. Houston's also allowed the fourth most yards after contact per outside rush at 4.4 and the fifth most rushing yards over expected to outside rushes this season at 1.1. Bottom line, I have Baltimore winning 23-21. Now, even though Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson Jr., the only teammate duo to have 14 or more sacks since 2024, will be playing for Houston. I just wanted to get that in there because such an impressive stat. I talked to Zach Martin about Cooper Rush's ability to win. And as he puts it, he's a coach on the field, which to me, this translates to his ability to execute drives to get the win. There are only five quarterbacks with a higher win percentage than Cooper Rush since 2021 who have started at least 10 games. Patrick Mahomes, Jalen Hurts, Josh Allen, Jaden Daniels, and Lamar Jackson. All right, let's try my new idea for a segment. Remember the Choose Your Own Adventure books? Like, if you want to slay the dragon, go to page 47. If you want to become best friends with the dragon, go to page 100. It's kind of like that, but kind of for math. First, I'll give a player projection for what my model chooses, so the higher probability outcome in my model, the winning scenario. Then I'll give one for the lower probability outcome. So if this team upsets that team, in the case we were just talking about, if Houston were to upset the Ravens, you'll see what I'm talking about, I hope. Here we go. If you believe the Saints' run game is the difference maker, then an Alvin Kamara touchdown should be on your list. I know we saw a lot of Kendre Miller last week, but I have Kamara going for 76 on the ground, 2 for 11 in the pass catching game, and reaching pay dirt. If you believe the Saints' league low defensive pressure rate will give Jackson Dart the time to find his man in the passing game, then the safest way to play this is Cam Scataboo to have more than 17.5 receiving yards. Without Malik Nabers, Wandale Robinson is likely in line for a big volume uptick, but that is riskier. If you buy into the Lions' run game advantage over the Bengals, then may I offer you a David Montgomery touchdown. Now, Jahmyr Gibbs is the higher probability play here, but I like upside, so let's go with David Montgomery. If you believe the Bengals will find a way to get Jake Browning to come back from past seasons and not the one we've seen so far this season, then let's go with the Jamar Chase touchdown. It becomes an even better option. I'll phrase it like that because I like it in 49% of simulations where the Lions are winning, and I like it in 58% of simulations in a Bengals upset. Should the Lions give the Bengals zone, so any zone look, Lions play a lot of man, but if they give them zone, expect Chase to get active. He's caught the third most passes, 24, and gained the second most receiving yards among wide receivers against zone coverage this season. And the Lions have given up the sixth highest completion percentage over expected and the eighth most yards per attempt when playing zone coverage. If you believe Jim Harbaugh will have some answers to the O-line woes for Justin Herbert, then have a look at a Quentin Johnston touchdown. He's caught 10 of 15 for 147 and 3 scores against man coverage this season, and the Commanders play man at the eighth highest rate. If you believe the Commanders' pressure front will be able to exploit the backup tackles, then look at Justin Herbert to rush for more than 17.5 yards. He's scrambled to run on a career-high 6% of dropbacks this season, and he's turned those 10 scramble runs into 95 yards and 4 first downs, including 3 explosive gains, so that's 10 or more yards. The Commanders have allowed a league-high 8.8 expected yards per carry to opposing scramblers this season, so 8 carries, 59 yards. If you believe that the Ravens will be able to make use of the Texans' defensive rushing vulnerability, then you should also believe Derrick Henry rushes for more than 78.5 yards and scores a touchdown. Derrick Henry has a lot of experience playing the Texans. In fact, he has 4 career games against them with at least 200 rushing yards and 2 or more rushing touchdowns. That's more than any other player has total versus all opponents combined in their entire career. If you believe that the Texans finally figure out a way to bottle up Henry, then consider a Woody Marks touchdown. He has outsnapped Nick Chubb 59-40% last week, and rushing success unlocks a lot against the Baltimore defense. Did you like this segment? Did you understand it? It's one prop in the scenario my model likes best, and then one prop for the scenario that my model thinks is less likely to happen. If you like it, and I kind of like it, it needs a name. I asked ChatGPT, and this is what it came up with. Choose the number, adventure in the odds, pick your prop path. I don't know. You can comment on this in the channel because I know how to comment on YouTube now. No big deal. The next 3 games share that their projected scores are within 2 points. I think one of these 3, or maybe all 3, are the most competitive of the day. Starting off when the Cowboys head to New York, not to take on the Giants, but to take on the Jets in a game where the Cowboys are favored by 2.5 points and the total is 47.5. Have you ever noticed in the Siri commercials, they don't answer? Hey Siri, who leads the NFL in passing yards? Well, the answer is Dak Prescott with 1,119. He also has a 72.9 completion percentage, which would be the highest in NFL history by a player that also led the NFL in pass attempts. He has 166 of those. Prescott, in play action passing, something he does the 9th highest rate, 27% of the time, he has a 62% dropback success rate using play action. That is 2nd highest in the league. It is important in this one. Why? Because the Jets have allowed 4 passing touchdowns to play action, tied for the 2nd most, and they've allowed the 3rd highest dropback success rate against it at 59%. On the Jets' offensive side of things, they are third in the NFL with 578 rushing yards this season. That is their most as a franchise through four games since 2014. And Dallas, their defense, stop, you've heard it before, they have the last place total defense. They're allowing 420.5 yards per game. Bottom line here, even with a banged up offensive line, my model has the number one Dallas offense eking out a win 24-22. The advantage for the boys when the Jets use man coverage is one of the keys. The Jets play man on 38% of their dropbacks so far this season. That's the seventh highest rate. And when they do so, they allow a 68 completion percentage against it. That's 29th in the NFL. Just so you know, the numbers are 27-40 to be caught. So 27 passes were caught of the 40 attempts, 308 yards and 6 touchdowns. Only one team has allowed more such touchdowns in man coverage, and that's the Browns with 7. And the Jets defense is only pressuring the opposing quarterback on 29.4% of dropbacks. That ranks 26th in the NFL. I have two sneaky stats for you to track in this one. First, on the Cowboys side, it's Jake Ferguson. He forecasts to catch more than 5.5 passes in my model. He leads Dallas with 34 receptions, which is the second most in the NFL, the most among tight ends. In fact, it is the most receptions by a tight end through his first four games in a season in NFL history. On the other side, the Jets' Garrett Wilson to earn more than 60.5 receiving yards. Wilson has 50-plus in 9 consecutive games. That's the second longest active streak, second only behind Puka Nacua, who's done it for 12 games, but it is the longest streak by a Jets player since Eric Decker in 2015. Moving on to Tampa Bay at Seattle, where Jackson Smith and Jigba host Emeka Ebuka. Remember, they were former teammates at Ohio State from 2021 to 2022. But now, both lead the NFL with 5 receptions of 25-plus yards each, and they rank in the top 2 overall in deep receiving yards. Did I sell it well enough? Anyways, Seattle is favored by 3.5 points in this matchup, and the total is 44.5. Baker Mayfield has been under pressure on 39.6% of his dropbacks, 63 times total. That is the fourth most, yet he still managed to air it out, averaging 8.7 air yards per attempt, the fourth most. And Emeka Egbuka, all 4 of his receiving touchdowns have been for at least 15 yards. 3 of them have gone for 25 or more, which is tied through the first 4 weeks of a player's rookie season over the last 10 seasons with Ja'Marr Chase in 2021. This is going to be a tougher test, though, because the Seahawks have allowed the second fewest receiving yards to wide receivers, just 412, and the lowest passer rating to targets when they've been wideouts at just 47.9. Sam Darnold is averaging 10.1 yards per attempt this season when not under pressure. That is the second highest rate in the league. Tampa Bay's defense, though, is pressuring opposing quarterbacks at the second highest rate in the league, 46.8%. Let's break the pressure situation down a little bit further. The Bucs blitz at the 6th highest rate, 38.3% of the time, and both of Sam Darnold's 2 interceptions have come against the blitz. One potential solution to escape the pass rush, more play action. This is an area where Sam Darnold is averaging 11.9 yards per attempt. That's second best in the league, just to Lamar Jackson. So for me, that drives my bottom line of 23-21, a 2-point win for the Seahawks. Both run defenses are in the top 6 in rushing yards allowed per game, but Seattle's advanced numbers shows a tiny edge. The Bucs have -2 rushing yards over expected this season, the 10th fewest in the league. They have the 10th lowest rushing success rate this season as well. It's sub 40%, 39.8%. And Seattle, they have allowed the second fewest EPA per carry this season, -0.22 points, and the 4th fewest rushing yards over expected per carry this season at -0.5. Philadelphia is looking to stay perfect when the Denver Broncos come to town. Eagles are favored by 3.5 points, and the total in this one is 43.5. Let's look at each quarterback. So Bo Nix has the 9th fewest yards per pass against man coverage this season. It's an average of just 5 yards per attempt. And he has the 9th lowest dropback success rate against man coverage this season at 41%. The Eagles use man at the 9th highest rate, 33%, and have allowed the 5th fewest EPA per dropback when using it at -0.36 points. On the other side, Jalen Hurts is the only quarterback to start all 4 games this season and not throw an interception. We're knocking on wood because we're not jinxing anyone around here. He actually joins Brock Purdy as the only quarterback that has done so. So we're talking about the past 4 games in the last 5 seasons. However, Hurts has been pressured on 44% of his dropbacks, the 4th highest rate, and Denver's defense leads the NFL with a 48% pressure rate and 15 sacks, which is also the most in the NFL. They've only allowed 2 passing touchdowns as well. That is the fewest in the league. Bottom line, by the narrowest of margins, I have the Eagles coming out on top, 22-21. The run game decides this one. Well, let's look at it. Saquon Barkley has averaged just 59.3 rushing yards per game and a 3.1 yard per carry average. And the Broncos as a whole offense, they're averaging 143.3 rushing yards per game, which is good for 5.1 yards per carry. They also are averaging 4.3 explosive runs per game. That's third best in the NFL. But Cynthia, you have Philadelphia winning. What's the small difference here? Well, I didn't say the whole run game. I said the run game, meaning the tush push here, which counts in the run game. This week, we're going to do our touchdown segment a little differently. Let's start with two big names who should have big games, and then the three normal weekly wildcards. Usually we do five, but this time it is just three. They are forecast touchdown scorers who could be considered a little underrated, but not to us. They aren't like the first two guys who you did draft in the top rounds of your fantasy draft. Instead, these are guys who aren't among the top few touchdown scorers on the season. They're guys who have elevated end zone reaching odds this week. So two big names and three more sleeper types. All right, big name number one, Saquon Barkley against the Broncos. Dre Greenlaw was brought in for moments like this, but unfortunately, he hasn't played for the Broncos yet and is currently on IR. End zone, Barkley. Big name number two, Amon-Ra St. Brown against the Bengals. DJ Turner has been good in man, but Amon-Ra St. Brown has produced the most expected points added per route at 0.6 EPA per route and the fifth most yards of separation per target at 2.9 against man coverage among all wide receivers this season. Player number three, which is our weekly wild card number one, Juwan Johnson against the Giants. New York's defensive front got after Justin Herbert at a 48% rate, causing two sacks and helping to cause two interceptions. Spencer Rattler is looking to stay interception-free against the blitz. He has three touchdowns against it, which is great. So shorter passes help increase those odds. Look for him to target Juwan Johnson. Weekly wild card number two. He's our fourth player for this segment. He may not count here for long, but George Pickens against the Jets. Fun fact, he ranks third best with 7 contested catches. And weekly wild card number three, our fifth player for this segment, Stephon Diggs against his old squad, the Bills. Which brings us to our final matchup of the show, the Sunday Nighter in Orchard Park. Jump through some tables, circle the wagons. The Bills host the Pats, and they're favored by 7.5 points in a game where the total is 49.5. Interestingly, both Drake May and Josh Allen each rank in the top 5 in offensive touchdowns and passer rating. May has more passing yards and the same number of passing touchdowns, so 988 yards, 6th in the NFL. 8 yards per attempt, 7 passing touchdowns, and 2 picks. Josh Allen has 964 yards, it's 7th in the NFL, averages 8 yards per pass attempt, 7 passing touchdowns, and just 1 interception. The stat that stands out about Drake May is his performance against the blitz, where he has both a 73.2 completion percentage and a 126.2 passer rating, both rank in the top 5 in the league. Buffalo's defense, though, has allowed the fewest passing yards per game and passing yards per play at 125.8 and 4.88 respectively. For Josh Allen and the Bills, it's all about production using short passes, as in the one sub 10 air yards, something that they've done on 67% of their pass attempts. That's the 10th highest rate in the league. Good for 7.4 yards per pass. That's second most in the league and the third most EPA on them at 0.24 points. The Patriots have allowed the 6th most EPA per pass on them, so 0.21, and the 6th most yards per pass on throws under 10 air yards at 7. So short passes mean reliance on yak. And Buffalo, 56.1% of their passing yards have come after the catch, the 7th highest rate in the league, and the Patriots have allowed the 7th most yak per reception this season at 6. Bottom line, I have a 30-22 victory for the Bills. Josh Allen has 7 touchdowns with no interceptions on passes under 20 air yards. That's the highest touchdown to interception ratio on sub deep passes, so anything under a deep pass in the NFL. When you look at the deep passes, though, he has the 6th lowest passer rating at 46.9. Josh Allen has been under the least pressure, least football pressure, this season at 21.7%. Congratulations to his O-line again for being awesome. The Patriots will look to test this, especially on the inside, with both Christian Barmore and Milton Williams each ranking among the top 5 in defensive tackles and pressures this season. In fact, Barmore leads the position with a 16.1 pressure rate. But in this case, my model says the advantage goes to the offense in terms of who wins. Let's finish this off with good for 6. 6 Sunday stats to track in order of least to most risky. Number one, Javonte Williams to earn more than 16.5 receiving yards against the Jets. With two-fifths of the O-line banged up and or not even playing, it's likely that Williams will have to help in the pass-catching realm too. Number two, Devontae Smith to have more than 45.5 receiving yards against Denver. Smith leads the Eagles with 17 receptions, 158 receiving yards, and has one receiving touchdown. That is the fewest receptions and yards through week four in a season in his career. He's had 60 or fewer in all four games played so far this season. And yes, it is hard to pick the Broncos defense to be the slump buster in any way, but the number has come down too far, even for a team with zero passing in the second half last week. Number three, Trey Tucker to have more than 38.5 receiving yards against the Colts. Xavien Howard surprise retired on Wednesday, which helps project for more open space for Tucker to work in. Number four, Darren Waller to have more than 2.5 receptions against the Panthers. He had 2 touchdowns last week, which isn't as predictive as much as it is just cool. But the Dolphins defense has the highest third down conversion rate. How does that work? It's over 51%, just so you know. So my point is that the Panthers have a chance to score some points, meaning passes don't forecast to necessarily stop all that often. Plus, without Tyreek Hill, there will be more volume to go around. Number five, Keon Coleman to earn more than 32.5 receiving yards against the Pats. Coleman leads the Bills with 17 receptions, 203 yards, and has one receiving touchdown. Number six, and this is a risky one, Justin Fields to pass for more than 1.5 touchdowns against the Cowboys. He'll see a lot of zone, we know this, which could bait him to run more, but it was not six enough to predict more than 48.5 rushing yards, but I do have that too. And there you have it. Those are my notes for the Week 5 Sunday slate of games. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, please subscribe, like, comment, pass it along so we can continue to grow. I really appreciate it. I added a whole bunch more props and player projections in throughout. I sprinkled it in throughout the show even more, which was a direct reflection of some of the comments that I've been reading on the channel. So thank you for those. Please keep those coming. Did you notice I learned how to write back this week? Such a boomer. I'm actually not. I'm a millennial, but we're into it. But ultimately, thank you for those. I love the community that we're growing here. I want to be your analytics expert. I want to find the best information so you can enjoy watching the most. You can, you know, beat your friends in a little friendly competition and use the information however you would like. So that is my goal, and I will do anything I can to keep achieving that goal and get better at every single week. So thank you so much for being a part of it. I will see you back here for the Monday night episode, which is a great game down in Duval between the Kansas City Chiefs and the Jacksonville Jags. The 3-1 Jacksonville Jags, no less. Look forward to it, and most importantly, enjoy the football.